Welcome to Restaurant Influencers, presented by Entrepreneur. I am your host, Sean Walchef. This is a Cali BBQ Media production. In life, in the restaurant business, and in the new creator economy, we learn through lessons and stories. Today, we have Chef Jennifer Sabasigari. You can find her on Instagram at Jennifer Sabasigari. She has over 333,000 Instagram followers. She's a chef. She's a content creator. She's a TEDx speaker. She's going to be in an upcoming movie. The reason why we put on this show is to teach not just the hospitality business, but any business owner that storytelling is important. And Chef Jennifer, thank you for agreeing to share your secrets with us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. You are one of the first people that actually know how to pronounce my last name. So kudos to you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Well, let's start with our favorite random question, which is, where in the world is your favorite stadium, stage, or venue?
Ooh, huh, man. Wait, so what an interesting question. So favorite stadium, I would say Toyota Center. I used to live right across the street from the Toyota Center in Houston. So that was fun. I've gone to my very first adult concert at the Toyota Center.
Cool.
So favorite venue, I've never been, but I would say this beautiful venue in Italy, in Lake Como. I want to do like a dope barbecue cookout live fire event there. They do a lot of weddings. I'm not sure what's the name, but it's in Lake Como. You see it all the time on social media. What was the third?
Stadium, stage, or venue?
Stage. Oh, I would say the TED stage. That's my favorite stage.
That's awesome. Well, we're going to go to the Toyota Center. Since that's right in your hometown, and we're going to rent out the Toyota Center. We're going to put on an event for Entrepreneur, for Toast, who's the title sponsor of this show. Toast Prime powers all of our technology and all of our barbecue restaurants, and they give us the opportunity to share stories like this. We'll get some other partners involved, but what we care about is people that listen to this show, people that watch. They are a different breed. We are not ordinary hospitality professionals. We are storytellers at heart. Right. And we're going to go and we're going to rent out the entire Toyota Center. I'm going to put you on center stage. And I'm going to say, Chef Jennifer, bring us back. Bring us back to your first cooking experience at the refugee camp when you fell in love with food. And tell us the story.
Man, you just put me on the spot. First,
that's how we do it. That's how we do it on this show.
First, I would thank the crowd. You got to route them out. Make sure that you're in the building. They're there. You're connecting with them emotionally, physically. They're feeling your vibe. Then I would tell them the story, how my first experience in a refugee camp, Toyota Center, are you here? Where's all my refugees? Where's all my immigrants? Where's all of my fighters, my outsider, my barbecue cooker, my... The grill girl, where are you? Come on. Let's hear you, right? My first love of cooking happened when I was just a shy little girl. I was about 11 years old, very sad, but cooking just gave me so much joy. I was in a refugee camp watching my parents struggle. They came from all the way to the top. And my parents, we ended up in a refugee camp and we didn't have anything. And my mom had to go to the grocery store to get some vegetable to the farm. And she was like, Jen, I need you to cook. And I was like, man, I've watched her cook. I was her little marketer. I've been a marketer sales girl since I was almost 10 years old. Marketing chapatis. Anybody in here eat chapatis? Where's my Indians? Where's my West Africans? But anyways, so I literally just, she had all of the ingredients there, tomato paste, tomato sauce. She had the onion, the garlic, the nutmeg. She had the ginger, and I just chopped those vegetables, baby. I was just the little girl chopping the vegetable. Probably my hand was dirty. I probably didn't know what I was doing, but it's okay, right? Sometimes you're going to cook with a little dirt. It's all good. It's outside, it's open fire. And I started by just making the fire. My neighbor was with me. She was our next door neighbor. She was a single woman. And she just helped me make the fire. We turned out the fire. I learned how to make the fire the old school way. I'm sure a lot of people in here make it the new school way, where we had to take charcoal and something like this, either paper or plastic, you put it on top and then you just let that fire go until it's just going to work. You're going to add as many charcoal as you can, as many paper as you can. And that's really what happened. The fire started. Then I started chopping my vegetables. After chopping my vegetables, I was like, man, what do I do next? I remembered the night before she was making a red sauce. So I put onions, let them sear for about a couple minutes. After I let them sear, I added my garlic. And it was so crazy that I knew this technique when I was a kid, but I didn't even know that these were techniques, right? And I just added my garlic, make sure it sweat. Then I added all my seasoning. And then I made a sauce. But then on another clay pot, I was just searing that meat with salt and pepper, add it all together, took some water, add it all in, and let it braise for about an hour. Made sure there was sauce. I'm not sure if it was very buttery, but we used Goya oil. That was one thing that was given to us. And there we have my very first cooking experience in a refugee camp. And magical. It was delicious. Until today, I remember that flavor. And it's always it's like the staple of my cooking. Garlic, nutmeg, salt and pepper, and fresh ginger. That combination is magic.
Can you bring us back to the struggle?
Oh,
the refugee camp, the hardship that you went through to, and how old were you? And when you first came over to America?
Man, the refugee camp was such, you know, I don't like to use it as a struggle anymore because it really shaped who I am as a woman today. So it was actually a blessing. So a little bit, we're just going to go back a little further down. My father was a diplomat for the Congolese government in Burundi. So we lived such an amazing life while we were there. And when the war happened, the civil war in Rwanda, which is known as the genocide of Rwanda, happened, it really affected all of the countries, all of the surrounding countries. So Congo was one of them. So we went back to Congo. And that's really when the struggle started. The struggle started by, you know, my father getting kidnapped, almost three times. I feel like the first time we actually had like a funeral for him. And because we didn't know that he was going to come back. But God is so good. My dad is still here today. He, you know, he was a very powerful man. So we didn't really live in that area much because he was working a lot in Burundi. So a lot of people didn't know who he was. So when we came back, you know, a lot of people were talking. So they try to kidnap him. I've watched my mom. She's such a resilient woman. I think I get a lot of her strength, my strength through her. I've seen her really just almost going to just a deep, deep depression. There were times that the soldiers would come in, the rebels would come in, and they would just put all of us down and just ask my parents for money. And my mom would have to go to the safe, give them money, and they would leave. So I've watched so much of that happening. And then thank God for the United Nations. When all of this commotion was happening and we didn't know where to go, my mom knew someone that worked for the United Nations. This is why I always tell people relationship building is so important, because I learned how relationship building really helped my parents to get here. My parents always had great relationship with people, made sure that they kept those relationship and they nurtured those relationship is really important. So That guy actually told my mom, hey, the United Nations is giving 1500 visa to Congolese victim to come to America. And at first my dad was like, oh, hell no, I'm not going. I'm not leaving my property, my farm, my great life that I have to go live in a refugee camp. My mom at that point, she was just so done. She was like, I'm gonna take my kids. There's six of us. I'm gonna pack and take my kids. You wanna stay here for houses and real estate? Don't care. So she packed all of us up. And the night before, we were packing for like 3 days. The night before, my dad decided to come with us. At first, he was like,
Wow.
no, I'm not going. I'm staying. I have so much assets here, right? But I'm so glad that he chose us. So then we went to a refugee camp in Congo. So after 3 weeks of being there getting screened, then we relocated to Cameroon in Longi. It was really like a desert tornado zone. It was a great place for me. It was kind of like I remember going into that flight. I was just looking around like, thank God, we don't have to see no soldiers. We don't have to think about people dying. We don't have to run away from, the war, actually witness dead people. Like, it was just such a horrific memory that I have. So I was just really, really excited to get on that plane. So when we got on the plane, we got to the refugee camp, which is Longi. We were living in tents. First time I've ever lived in a tent outside. I call it kind of like tent jail, but it was like those super tiny like mattress. But I'm so thankful because all of their experiences really taught me also how to be humble, how to be so appreciative of the good times and the bad times. So, we were there for a year and a half getting screened. My sister actually came before us, a year before us, because she was an adult. And then we followed her after. And then we were relocated in Austin, Texas.
Do you remember Austin, Texas, when you first got there?
Oh, yes. That's my home. Austin, like, I love Austin. Like, Austin is like my home. It's literally like my home. Like, I have so much memories in Austin. Austin was great. I remember, you know what I really remember? I remember getting to JFK because it was my very first time being in a big airport like that. So I remember coming into JFK. I was super, super excited. I saw so many lights. Like, I was like, oh my God, the lights. There were so many people. I remember I saw a lot of Jews in JFK. That was my very first time seeing Jews. And then they had I think it's called the yarmulke, if I'm not correct. Sorry, guys. So I saw so many people, and I was just like a shy little girl. I didn't know like how to fit in. I didn't speak any English. And I knew at that point that we looked different because of just like the way people were looking at us. But that really didn't bother me because I was just excited that we were there. And we had somebody to greet us from the nonprofit organization that we worked with. So that was really cool.
Do you remember when you first applied to go to culinary school?
Oh, yes.
Give us a story about that decision.
When I moved to Austin after high school, I was very confused, and I had a lot of trauma. I really didn't know who I was as a person or what was my purpose in life. I was just going through so much just emotional roller coaster. So that took me to a really, really dark spot where I was just partying a lot, really not caring about school. All of my family members was highly educated, so education was super important for my family. And I was like, I don't want to go to school. I just want to party. I don't want to look like this because I had so much trauma And my parents also, they really didn't know how to help me. And it's not because they didn't want to help me, they just had no idea how to help me. So I had an epic 25th birthday. I had like a 2 weeks party. I hosted party. That's whenever hosting party was like the thing. I hosted party at like seven clubs in Houston.
Nice.
And I was just like partying every day. Like every time I see this influencer, Alex Earl, it really reminds me of me when I was a kid because she's just so wild and all her story resonates to me because I'm like, oh my God, that was me. That was definitely me.
Yeah.
But anyways, so like heavy party, going out, doing all this stuff, getting published and like modeling magazines and things like that. And I just woke up. And after that, I woke up, I was in my bed by myself. And I just felt so low. I was like, I'm not really feeling this anymore. And then my family, we weren't really getting along. So they didn't really like my choices. And I realized, I was like, dude, I have all this influence. I've grown so many followers. I've partied in Miami, in Vegas, blah, 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 Super Bowl, All-Star Weekend, you name it, right? And I was like, I need to do something. What am I gonna do? Like, what is something that I love? So I was like, I remember when we came to America, my mom, she always cooked. So she went to actually go to Le Cordon Bleu to visit, and I went with her. And she never went through. So I was like, maybe I should go to culinary school.
Wow.
So then I went online. I was like, well, I need to figure out like what type of chef am I going to be? Like, what does a chef work look like? Because I had no idea. So I go online, I found Giada. I'm like Googling hot chef, sexy chef. That's literally what I was Googling.
Nice.
Hot, sexy chef. And it's like Giada de la Trentes, Mas Martha Stewart. I'm like, Rachel Ray when she did FM magazine. I was like, oh, okay, so they exist. Okay, so they're hot, they cook, they have restaurants. I have no idea. So I'm thinking right after culinary school, this is gonna be my life. So at this time, I live in Austin, in Houston. So I call my best friend. I'm like, girl, I'm going back to school. I'm going to be a chef. I'm going to do this. And she's like, oh, okay. Good for you. I call my mom. I was like, yeah, I'm going to be a chef after culinary school. I'm going to go work for Giada. And I'm going to be this big celebrity chef. And I'm going to get on magazines. I'm going to have my own TV show. Oh, baby. And then I go with that energy.
Yeah.
It, to go tour culinary school, right?
Okay.
So I book an appointment with the administration guy. His name was Sean, and he was like, yeah, and he's giving me a tour. I'm telling him all my goals, and he's just feeding me all these goals, like, yes, you're gonna be a celebrity chef, you have this, you have that.
Nice.
Oh, have you ever heard of like Michelin star chefs? I'm like, what is that? Oh, there are these big time chefs. The food. I was like, oh my gosh. So after culinary school, after I graduate, this is like the life. Yes, he's totally feeding into my ego. So I signed the paper, start school, and I realized that, oh no, this is not what's gonna happen. And that was the journey, but I'm so glad that I went through. I graduated with honors because, when I first went to culinary school, I thought that going to culinary school, as soon as you graduate, you become this big time chef. So I was like, I need to go to school every day. I need to be on honors. I need to really get a big internship because I knew that all of those accolades will help me become this big time chef. But no idea that I have to go be a prep cook.
Right.
So that was pretty funny.
Bring us in. Tell us about being a prep cook. I mean,
Oh,
I think a
listen.
lot of people in the hospitality space, restaurant owners, we want to open up a restaurant, and then we open up the restaurant, and then we're doing everything that we thought we would never do. But that's the reality of the hospitality business, is that you have to do the jobs that no one else wants to do until you can figure out how to get someone else to do those jobs.
Oh my God, what a great question. Yeah, I mean, being a prep cook was a culture shock. I walked in the kitchen. I'm this really cute girl, full of makeup on. I have women chefs that are like, ugh, this is not a fashion show. They're just like, and I don't like to call them haters. They was just like not friendly. So it was so tough. I had to learn. Mind you, I was 25 years old, so my ego was just getting shot everywhere. But I had to also learn how to check my ego because now I have to move up the ladder. So I just went in there. I was very quiet because I really didn't want anybody to know what I did outside of work, which was like my modeling and things like that, all of the brand deals that I had. So I was very quiet, very shy. I asked questions, but they thought it was annoying. So I was pretty much like the annoying girl that always asks questions and doesn't know anything. That's how I was labeled. Oh, she's so annoying. Oh, she never knows anything. Oh, she's
For
no
you, when
support.
did you first find your voice online? Which platform? Was it Instagram?
Instagram.
Yeah. What year were you starting to actually, start to create content, start to build community?
I started to build a community since the first time I got on Instagram,
That's amazing.
which it was in 2012. I was going to Miami for spring break and I had an Android phone. And I remember me and one of my best friends. She had Instagram, but she would use Instagram as, remember, I don't know if you remember, Instagram just used to be the app that will go and edit our photos to post it on Twitter. So it was just a filter app. So she will always have these beautiful pictures of her outside. I was like, girl, what filter that? She's like, I use my mom's phone because it has Instagram. And I remember first time I got on Instagram, we were literally on our way to Miami. I was online checking when Instagram is gonna get on Android. And I put and the that first time I posted and I started posting every single day. And I would just post photos of me. And that's when I learned that personal branding is it's bigger than your restaurant, your I mean, your product, it's you are the brand. And
Bring
that's when
us.
I'm
So,
building.
what was your first brand deal on Instagram?
My first brand deal was Fashion Nova.
Okay. And how did that come to be? What did they want, and what was the outcome?
So they wanted to do some posts. They will send me every 3 months. I actually saw a lot of the girls that was just doing like, I guess Instagram modeling. That's what it's called now. Getting Fashion Nova, and I was like, dude, I'm just gonna DM them. I slid in the
Awesome.
DM. I was like, hey, I think at that time I had like 50,000 followers or something, and I was like, I would love to start working with you guys. So they start selling me like boxes of clothes, boxes of clothes. But Fashion Nova, the reason why Fashion Nova is such a huge brand and it's such a huge community, because they control what you post. They control your content, they control what you post, what you actually pick out. They will never have you pick out outfits that are conservative or office wear. It's always sexy. They like he has mastered brand identity.
That's
And
awesome.
so I started working with them. I worked with them for almost 5 years. And when I decided to rebrand, that's when that deal fell apart because I was just not gonna take pictures like that anymore.
For you, learning what you did in the modeling space and bringing it over to culinary, what did you learn?
I learned that social media is one of the most powerful tools that we have. Social media gets you access to things that you will never dream of. I remember when we went to the All-Star game, we met French Montana. It was me and one of my really good friends, and French Montana is who gave us tickets, and we were right there front row at the All-Star game. And we would have never met French Montana if we were not Instagram famous or whatever you want to call it, or we weren't Instagram girls. There's so many things that social media does for you. So for me, every time that I'm rebranding or I'm launching something, I always try to connect with the players in that industry, bring them value, and also bring myself value as well.
That's great. Can you share a little bit about the movie? You got
yes,
some exciting news that you can share?
Yes. So Tables of Nation is coming out. So I started my nonprofit about, so I met the producers and the director through one of my colleague that has helped me also as a mentor through my nonprofit. So they are looking for incredible stories of immigrants or refugees that are chefs, that are caterers, that have restaurant. So I was casted for that movie. The premiere, it's a documentary, it's a docuseries. The premiere is February 21st, and we're streaming it online. So I'm super, super excited.
We'll put a link in the show notes for anybody that wants to see or find the movie. That's awesome. Congratulations. That's a big deal.
Thank you. I'm super excited to just share my story and to connect with more people and to just, you know, share the story of resilience. I feel like a lot of people, you know, they see us online and they think it's all peaches and cream, but there's so much to unpack and to unveil and to, you know, to learn from others as well.
Can you share anything about the live fire feast that you're going to be hosting?
Yes, I'm so excited. So Live Fire is happening. This is our third year. Every time I talk about Live Fire, I get so nervous because it's so stressful.
we did a charity event in front of our restaurant for 10 years where we shut down the entire street, and it was this big, huge production. And it is a lot of work. It's a lot of work.
Is that Dîner en Blanc?
What's that?
Is that the one that you're talking about, Dîner en Blanc?
No, it was the Spring Valley Tailgate and Barbecue Festival. But we've organized, you know, large events and charity events, and it's a lot of work. And I understand the worries that go in, the sleepless nights of, is it going to work? Are people going to show up? Are people going to donate money? Are we going to get enough sponsors? Are we going to sell enough tickets? It's never ending.
The anxiety is coming.
I'm sorry.
Last year, I gained 30 pounds of stress.
Yeah.
I was like, so this year, I'm glad that I'm in West Texas, just relaxing before I go back to Houston start planning. But Live Fire is great. You know, it's something that I'm super passionate about. I got the idea when I saw Outstanding in the Field on Instagram, and I was just so in wow about how they put their event together. And I've always wanted to be part of it, but I don't think I'm a big enough chef to be part of it yet. But I was like, you know what? I'm going to create my own Outstanding in the Field. But the difference is we're just going to cook on these huge open fire grills and really put a fun event for millennials together, a fundraiser, where we raise money for immigrants and refugees. About 60% of actually all of our sponsors and all of our staff that we hire is immigrant and refugee-based businesses. So it's not just that we're raising money for these programs, but we're also hiring those minority companies through this event. So it's going to be June 28th in Houston. This year, we're doing a wine. We want to do it at a winery. So it's going to be kind of like a wine dinner. I'm trying to figure out how we can cure a huge pig so that everybody can just come and, like, slice a piece themselves, kind of how the Ethiopian do their big meat. So we try to do different things every year. Last year was Taco Tuesday. It was amazing. And all of the auction part of our event is always like live art. So we always just like party and have fun. We have a very young demographic. Our demographic are mostly 25, no, 27 to 40. And that is really what we want to keep it because we want to grow with our donor as well. So this year is just going to be a different event. They're going to come in, they're going to do a wine tour. We're trying to find some activities, less talking, more fundraising. We're gonna have a longer auction hour. Instead of 1 hour, we'll do 1.5 hours, more artists, and just very fun food and wine. Any type of ideas that you have for me, Sean, send them my way.
You got it. I know you do a lot of work with restaurant owners and business owners with social media and with branding. We have an amazing audience of people from all over the world that tune into the show. Can you share a little bit, a couple secrets of things that you've learned about the power of social media, of where to start? If you're a restaurant owner that's listening to this, where should they start with social media?
Man, in 2024, I would say with restaurant owner, just start posting. Start posting, go back to your brand guideline, and just stay on brand. Start posting, tell us stories about your food. We want to be connected to your food. There's nothing better than you're eating something that has meaning behind it. We don't want to just hear how great the chef is and how many James Beard award he won. Don't care. We want to know the real story about the ingredient, where they're from, how are they cultivated, who is cultivating them, how are you impacting the environment, how are you impacting people's life, what are you doing for your staff? We crave for that as consumer. I go to restaurants that I have like a relationship with. If I go, and I love going to like great Michelin star restaurant, don't get me wrong, but sometimes I feel like I'm not really connected. I'm not connecting to the chef. I'm not connecting to the waiter. It's very robotic. We just want more stories, tell more stories, go out, meet people. There's so many tools in 2024 to help restaurant owners online. Put a stamp for your restaurant online, grow a community, be the boss that everybody wants to work for. I'm still in, I feel like I'm still in the beginning of my culinary industry. But I get so many volunteers that want to work with me. It's not because I'm this incredible chef, because they want to be part of what I'm building. So everyone wants to be part of a community. So building your community is very, very important. And a real community, a community that will last. See what happened in the pandemic. So many restaurants just vanished away. And I feel like most of those restaurants is because they didn't build that community. How do you build a community? Email, text message, show up, do event, do fun gathering for your staff, get on LinkedIn. There's so many ways. And this is really what I do. I help restaurants curate all of those needs, especially online.
That's awesome. And anybody that's listening to this show, you know that we are weirdly available. My grandfather, he always taught us to stay curious, to get involved, and to ask for help. So if you're listening to this, if you're watching this, send me a DM at Sean P. Walchef, SHAWNPWALCHEF. We host two live shows on LinkedIn every single week. If you send me a message on LinkedIn, I will send you an invite and bring you on stage and introduce you to our digital hospitality community. I am so grateful, Jennifer. Can you share with us a shout out? This is on entrepreneur.com. Give me a shout out to one person in your culinary journey, your storytelling journey that will be excited to hear their name mentioned on the show.
You put me on the spot.
That's right. I know. You can't give me my whole team, and I don't want the whole team. I need one person, one human.
I want to give a shout out to Justin Yu.
Okay.
So I want to give a shout out to him because working at his restaurant opened my heart and my eyes to many other things. All of the little things that I learned from there, or although my story at Oxheart is not peaches and cream, but it's been such a pivotal moment in my career. And I just want to give him a shout out, you know, no hate, always love. I think he's an incredible chef, and I just want him to continue to do well and to continue to grow.
It's awesome. So before I let you go, we believe that every single person that's listening, every brand that's listening, you can become your own media company. If a barbecue restaurant can become their own media company, you can become your own media company. We believe in smartphone storytelling, but I need to find out, are you an Android user or are you an iPhone user?
Oh, come on, Sean.
I don't know. You told me you had an Android. Are you still an Android user? I don't know. Did you convert?
Absolutely not. Steve Jobs is amazing.
So you're an iPhone user.
Huh?
You're an iPhone user?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Which version?
I think this one is the 13. I don't know, to be honest.
Do you update your software?
Yes. My fiance actually just got me an iPad yesterday. So the brand new iPad.
There you go. Now, do you prefer emails or text messages?
It depends. If I'm closing a deal, email.
If you're closing a deal, email. Do you prefer phone calls or text messages?
Phone calls.
How many emails do you get a day?
From brands, I would say about 7 or 8. But I'm out there, you know, like I'm very, very like if I like what I see, I'm going to slide in your DM. Yeah.
Any advice on reaching out to brands?
Just be authentic. I'm always really authentic. I tell them what I do. I have my little media kit that I send to all the brands. I'm very authentic. So I always also try to see where can I bring value? Where is the pain point? And if I can help, you know, it's just not always about the money, which the money is great. And we all want that ultimately. Right. But also just see their pain point, like really try to help. Most of the brand that I've built long-term relationship with, when we started, they weren't paying me a lot of money, but now we've grown and we've become like family. So it's a long-term investment. Think about it as a long-term investment. Don't think about it just, you know, short-term. And your content is your product. How many times can you utilize that same product to get your return? A lot of content creators are so quick to create, but to not repurpose those content. Some of the content that I've created for Social Feast, I still use them 4 years later for Live Fire, because I understand that those content are going to make me money for the next 5 years. So having these things in mind is really important when you're reaching out to brand, and be authentic and really help and give them your honest opinion. Don't just say things are great, and just be authentic. If you don't like their product, just be really authentic. Baby, I just didn't think this was, you know, for me, but maybe if you add salt or if you package it differently, it would just, those little tips really take you really far.
We say do it for the B-roll. If you don't document it now, you might need it in 4 years from now. And if you want to repurpose it,
And
you got to show the journey. You got to show where you
yes,
started, where you've been, and that makes the story that much more powerful.
1,000%.
What is your least favorite app?
I would say Twitter.
Twitter.
Twitter
What's your
X.
most favorite app?
Instagram.
I knew that one. And where do you music? Do you listen to Apple Music or Spotify or something
Apple
else?
Music, Spotify is cool, but Apple Music, we're Apple
Yep.
babies.
And do you prefer videos or photos?
Photos, but I love videos now.
Awesome. Jennifer, we truly appreciate you taking the time, sharing your story. We hope you keep radiating the energy and sharing the truth. We know you're going to go on to do some amazing things, and
Thank
we
you.
hope that you keep in touch.
Of
As always, let us know if there's anything that we can do, if there's anything this community can do. We appreciate it. Please share the episode with a friend. Please
course.
subscribe, write a review, and we are so grateful for you guys for listening to the show, supporting the show wherever we are in the world. We hope to meet in real life. And thank you so much, Chef Jennifer. We appreciate you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you too. I hope nothing but the best for you. And congratulations on all your success. You're doing it,
Thank you.
man.
We're doing
Toast
it. We're trying.
up. That's like, you're like out there.
We're doing it. We're
I'm
doing.
so excited. And I want to come to one of your restaurants, eat, and I want to come and we can do another episode live. That would
There
be
you go.
super fun.
Live fire. There it is.